A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com. Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello once again from Cannes. It's Michael Leader here, sitting in the Little White Lies flat, sitting across from Charles Bromesco.
Hello.
Charles, welcome. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing great. I'm glad to be here, glad to be in France, glad to be on the podcast, glad in general.
So from the Little White Lies crew in this flat, you've traveled the furthest. How's the jet lag holding
up? That's right. I am sort of bypassed jet lag and in an ambient tiredness that just never stops. And so it's a little bit simpler than jet lag.
Yeah. We should say in the previous episode, you might have heard some bells outside, some people rustling about in the streets. That's because we're in the old town of Cannes, the Souquet. And it's full of local colour here. So if you do hear bells, maybe in less than a minute's time, that's why.
Lovely winding streets, very easy to get lost in.
Mm-hmm, yeah, and we can maybe record on the balcony one day if we feel adventurous. But Charles, so far, yesterday we talked about the opening film of the competition strand, which was The Dead Don't Die. It's all kicked off now. More films. So what films have you seen so far?
So yesterday, the highlight of the day was Kleber Mendonça Filho and Juliano Dornelis' Bacurau, which played in the evening. And earlier that day, we had seen Les Misérables by Lodge Lee, a new French filmmaker. I understand this is his first feature.
Yeah.
Yeah. So those were really the big highlights of yesterday, along with in the director's Fortnite sidebar section, very early in the morning, we saw Deerskin, a new, very difficult to classify film from Quentin Dupieux. Not quite horror, not quite deadpan comedy, sort of both and neither.
Let's talk about Deerskin first. So I saw this in the evening, which had a whole director's fortnight opening ceremony preamble where
John Carpenter was
given the award of the director's fortnight strand. There was a long drawn out sequence where there was a synth duo playing the hits of John Carpenter, and then the head honchos of director's fortnight, which is the strand put together by the Directors Guild of France. So you had Catel Quillevert, the filmmaker, among others, reading out a love letter / poem to John Carpenter with synth backing.
This was like a romantic...
Really just saying how John Carpenter, you are the savior of cinema.
They did not do that in the morning.
Maybe you wouldn't really, if you got to...
I would not have been prepared for it.
Half six in the morning to queue to get there for your 8:45 a.m. screening. You don't want to sit for an hour through a long montage of John Carpenter movies before seeing Deerskin, maybe.
I would ask you, do you see any sort of Carpenterian presence in Deerskin? Do you see any connection there?
Interesting. There's this vein of dark humor, playful humor, maybe, but... Mm-hmm. That's an interesting point. You've blindsided me a little there. Do you bring that up thinking you did? Because I
just heard this now. Yeah, I did like it quite a bit. And thinking about it now, the first point of comparison that comes to mind is that they're both very fond of electronic music and deploy it very skillfully in their films. Dupieux has had an illustrious side career as a musician and DJ. I was just introduced to his big hit last night. What was it called?
It's called Flatbeat. He performed under the title Mr. Wazzo.
That's
so
exactly right.
Anyone from the 90s might remember that.
And so, yeah, I see that presence in his film now, even though those days of DJing are sort of behind him, as I understand. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, he is working in a different register of horror, different in that it does not go really for the slasher jugular right up until the final moments, I suppose. A lot of it is this very strange, slow build lead up. And we get to watch this main character, who's played by Jean Dujardin, a sort of obsessive man who owns this very cool looking deerskin jacket with all these, you know, fringe. He looks like Billy Jack. And he goes on a sort of insane mission to trick everyone in town into giving away their jackets so that he is the only one with a cool jacket. which already you can start to see the points of departure from Carpenter right there.
Yeah. Yeah, Jean Dujardin. And then he meets the local bartender played by Adèle Haenel, who we may know from the films of Celine Sciamma, but also The Unknown Girl. Yeah. How do we describe the tone of this film? It's only an hour and 17 minutes long.
A
so
nice,
it's
tight 77.
Very taut.
So the relationship between the two characters, Dujardin and Haenel, that's really what I think sets the film apart, because they, you know, start out as strangers. He goes to her bar, but he gradually learns that she is a film editor, and he enlists her help on his, and I'm using, you know, scare quotes that you can't see right now, his film, which is mostly him just toying around with a camcorder and shooting whatever, you know, passes through his gaze. And so they establish a sort of symbiotic, exploitative relationship where he is definitely using her for her money and the technical skills that he does not have, while at the same time she seems to be using him to bring some interest into what would otherwise be a very dull life.
It reminded me, because it does boil over, as we said, later on into more violent urges and tendencies. It reminded me a lot of the James Gunn film Super. Did you see that?
With Rainn Wilson.
Yeah, yeah. Rainn Wilson and Ellen Page, in a similar sort of symbiotic relationship where these characters find each other and egg each other on to...
They encourage each other, psychosis, yeah. I would say.
It's a fascinating film. You'd recommend it.
Highly. Yeah, really, really good looking film too. They're shooting a lot... I don't know what these locations are. I assume rural France,
Maybe.
But they've got these beautiful locations shooting on these sort of barren mountains and all these winding country roads. It's a really good looking film. Very funny. Devilishly funny. Really, really funny.
It sets us off on this strange wayward path through the program where The Dead Don't Die had a similar genre but deadpan vibe, Deerskin, and then Baccarat. This is the second or, or I guess third now competition film we've seen. Another one which has unexpected genre flourishes, unexpected dark humor, but then almost a vein of seriousness underneath that.
I read an interview recently with Wong Kar-wai, who was talking about selling Chungking Express to producers and financiers and all this, and the reason that the characters are cops is so that he could just tell them it was a cop story, which is very simple to convey, easy to finance, easy to sell. Of course, it's so much more than that, but it does make me wonder if these, you know, very esteemed European and Asian auteurs might include these elements to sort of give a sense of more easily packaged identity to their work.
Baccarat, then. Weirdly, that's almost has John Carpenter-esque moments in
yes,
as well.
Yes, yes, yes.
But it's about this small town in Brazil where one day they seem to just disappear entirely off the map and their cell phone reception disappears and then there are mysterious crew of operatives who are bearing down on them.
There are wooden coffins all over the place, just broken coffins. A lot of very strange elements that we don't really get context for until deep into the film.
Yeah. You've written about this.
I have, yeah. So last night at 2 a.m. I was up cranking them out. But yes, this situation in which I was able to see this film, which is going in colder than any audience anywhere, you know, no idea of even what is going to happen, makes for a very unusual viewing experience because the nature of a film critic, especially one who's on assignment on a tight deadline such as this, is that you start to mentally draft your review mid-film. You know, you get an idea of what you're going to say, and Baccarat makes that impossible because Mendonça and Dornelis will show images free of context. There is a UFO in the film and we don't learn what it's for until about 20 minutes later. And so, yeah, he lets you sort of marinate in your own bafflement for a little bit before cluing you in. And then even by the end of the film, there's still lots of very strange loose ends not quite tied up.
You know, for looking from the cast list, that Udo Kier is in this film.
Yes.
And you know that he is usually a badge of some sort of, maybe not trash, but at least some sort of popcorn thrills, B-movie thrills.
Scuzziness, yeah.
And he delivers, let's just say
he
that.
He is, I think, the Udo Kieriest role since Cell Block 99. Did you see that one?
Yeah,
I
saw that.
He's doing the same thing of unwavering menace, I believe, was the phrase that I ended up using.
So would you say that's another strong recommendation?
These are my big two for the festival so
Fantastic.
Far. Deerskin and Baccarat. Although, hey, it's only day two. Lots
it's
of movies
great that
come.
We've had such fascinating and confounding films so far.
Yeah. We're about two for four at this point, I would say. That's a healthy healthy ratio.
So it could all go wrong today. What are we seeing today? The two competition films this evening?
I have high hopes. This afternoon, I believe 4 o'clock, is Mati Diop's Atlantique, which Mati Diop I know very little about. This is her first feature, and she's done a handful of shorts that I have to confess I have not seen. However, a friend of mine who does publicity back in New York screened this for distribution consideration, and he spoke very, very highly of this film. Very excited about that one.
She's a disciple of Claire Denis, isn't she?
Disciple of Denis. Yeah. Her uncle is Jibril Diop Mambati, who's, you know, a legend as well. So yeah, I mean, she's got the bona fides, mm-hmm. and I have high hopes. And then this evening is the Loach time.
Ken Loach, so a bit more of a known quantity compared to a debut filmmaker.
It's before the screening of The Dead Don't Die for the official opening of the festival, they like to show a little clip package with about 10 seconds of footage from each of the competition films, and the Loach one is very typically Loachian in that we just see sad, pale-faced people arguing about money they don't have.
Exactly. It's very much in his wheelhouse, right, following on from our Daniel Blake. From the American point of view, what do you think of Ken Loach? What's the vibe? Because we very much in Britain, we have a set view of what Uncle Ken's like.
Uncle Ken, I love that. It's fun. My very first gun, my very first film, I believe, in 2016 was Daniel Blake, mm-hmm. Which I found very bracing at the time as someone who is frustrated by bureaucracy and by the internet, and I guess I'm angry about the same things that Ken Loach is angry about, which makes his films agreeable to me, but he's definitely prone to getting up on the old soapbox from time to time. But yeah, as an American, it's an interesting representation of British culture in the same way that I saw a Certain Regard film yesterday called Bull, which I feel like is sort of trying to represent America in a very similar way, and it got me wondering how we might look to Europeans.
Well, then he's also very popular in France.
Is that right?
Yeah, he can always rely on Cannes to show his films, and of course he's quite often awarded very well over here. So I suppose we'll see how
Daniel Blake that got the palm. Yes,
it did. Yeah, I guess we'll see how Sorry We Missed You will fare this evening.
Do you have any wildly premature thoughts about palm consideration? 2 days in, or just looking at the schedule to come?
Oh, I have no idea. Not at all. Do you?
I mean, I'm speaking completely out of my arse, as they would say in England, but this Suleiman film, I had binged his pictures earlier before coming to this festival. I hadn't seen anything from him, and this man is a genius, I'm pretty sure.
So what's that film called?
New one is called...
Is that this one? It Must Be Heaven?
Yes, It Must Be Heaven. He's a Palestinian filmmaker who likes to make these sort of Tati-esque comedies that feature him in the main role, a sort of fictionalized version of him. I think it's very interesting, and I think especially with the changing political climate of Palestine, he could be a very exciting, meaningful choice for the palm. Of course, we've got to see the film first.
Yeah. Is this the clip that we saw in the clip reel where it was three policemen or security guards on Segways almost doing a sort of synchronized...
I started cracking up in like 3 seconds. Yeah, absolutely.
But that's the fun of Cannes, is that all of these films in competition are world premieres. And of course, there may be a film like Once More Time in Hollywood with Quentin Tarantino that we may know sort of what to expect. There may be a trailer out, but then there are so many films from elsewhere in the world that we know nothing.
That's actually what I really love about Cannes. Coming here for the first time, I was amazed that... what was the big American premiere that year? I don't know. But the point was that these very mainstream American movies were received with the same rabid excitement as like the newest picture from Philo, who was there in 2016 as well.
Yeah, well, I personally can't wait for the Bong Joon-ho film, which is tomorrow evening or this weekend. Already, I've lost all sense of time and space.
Yeah, no, I'm drifting through these days as if like a ghost.
Mm-hmm. We should have an update on pizza. Have you had many pizzas so far, or what's your dish of choice?
I'm erring on the side of pasta this year. I'm trying to get off dairy, and so I have been getting a lot of delicious bolognese here. Very good Italian food in France.
It's surprising, right? Well, I guess we are on the Mediterranean.
But I do, I've got to make plans for one, classically French meal. I've got to get something very French in me before I get out of here.
Okay, we'll make sure that
we'll figure something out,
indeed. Charles, thank you so much.
Oh, it's been such a pleasure.
For chatting today. Maybe we'll have another chat later in the festival. I've been Michael Eder, talking from the Cannes flat for Little White Lies, Truth and Movies, Cannes Special, as always, presented by 7Digital.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.